Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 52 for February 23rd, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Guns. In an unfortunate sign of the times, across the USA, schools and other workplaces are stocking up on trauma bags designed to help stop people from bleeding out after a mass shooting event. Gun companies on the stock market see their shares skyrocket as capitalists await the next big consumer gun rush as panic turns into fear that soon all the guns may disappear. In a widely reported, somewhat misleading factoid, since the new year, 2018 has been witness to 18 different events where a firearm was discharged in a school-related environment. The disturbing trend of random mass acts of indiscriminate violence continues on year after year, and with that, the conversation about guns and violence cycles on via social media, dinner table debates, and the endless hum of the newsroom reels. After the mass shooting in Parkland High School on February 14th, the conversation quickly shifted from the adults interviewing kids on television and asking them to describe the dead bodies they had just seen. Seriously, what's wrong with people? To what the Republicans and Democrats in the government could do to solve the problem. While far from an expert on guns or the history surrounding these ideas of control, it seems that efforts in the USA behind gun control have always been racially motivated. The white supremacist history of gun control and the racial disparity of the preceding outcome. So really, what is the problem with guns, that is? Individuals and groups from all over the political spectrum have for years placed the blame on video games, music, and technology, to mental health and post-industrial civilization, and a little bit of everything in between. The not so clearly at times lines drawn in the sand range from those on the left aiming for stricter, more common sense gun control, but what about when cops kill teenagers, and those on the right vying for more surveillance and security. The right wants to arm teachers, increase surveillance, metal detectors, school resource officers, which is just a fancy name for having cops in schools, concealed carry, and basically turn education, already with so many other problems, further into the panopticon of real-life jail cell doors. And finally, you have a large majority of youth across the institutions of general education energized into the polarization of this or that framework of reform. If only the Snapchat redesign wasn't so terrible, maybe these kids could steer themselves away from the two clear roads to nowhere. There's an old Cuban saying that says, quote, "The classroom are like the jail cells," unquote, in reference to the limited free speech there, people keeping track of any nonconformity, and the repression that follows if you don't fall into line. All of these spontaneous, new, enlightened faces wanted to do something about their future, local organizers and woke activists pushing forward alongside the barreling train of momentous outrage. An important question to consider from the last episode of The Hot Wire inquired, what can anarchists do if protests coming out of this are all about gun control? Furthermore, how do we keep the conversation anarchist and put on our best anarchist public relation face? Should the redneck revolt be organizing more pro-gun rallies? Obvious answer, but if not, then what? And who? Should anarchists be open carrying in the places where such things are permitted more than they already do? Of course, but that's easy for me to say here. I'm in a state that has one of the nation's toughest laws on guns. So it's also a bit eye-opening to see anarchists open carrying at demonstrations and other far-off places. An old leftist, upon visiting New York City towards the end of the 19th century, said that anarchists on Sunday would not be found in the church pews, but rather out in the streets, target practicing and shooting their guns. Oh, how the times have changed. On the brighter side, various anarchist-orientated gun and self-defense clubs have existed over the years and have seemingly gained popularity recently with the election of Trump, with groups like Redneck Revolt and Trigger Warning anarchist gun clubs springing up across the states. I'd be very curious to learn about anarchist gun culture outside of the United States of America, but I'm also afraid that perhaps there isn't much of one. After all, Americans really do love their guns. You can even 3D print your own gun now, which really rings true to the anarchist idea of DIY. In all of this, this editorial may be amiss if I didn't mention one very well-known anarchist who has written and spoken extensively over the years on mass shootings, John Zerzan. They write, "The antidote lies in finding a basis for a renewal of community, moving away from the technified wasteland of ever more massified and dispersed society. We must not stumble on with what passes for political dialogue, a discourse that addresses almost nothing of real consequence. The shocking scandal mounts, and it is past time to look at what society is fast becoming and why." Unquote. On another note, a recently published book called Setting Sights, Histories and Reflections on Community Armed Self-Defense, edited by Scott Crow, is a wide-ranging anthology uncovering the hidden histories and ideas of community armed self-defense, exploring how it has been used by marginalized and oppressed communities, as well as anarchists and radicals within significant social movements of the 20th and 21st centuries. Among the multitude of overwhelming things going on in the world, locally, internationally, with friends, family, loved ones, work, and enemies, here is another potent subject rearing its head towards the top for anarchists and their friends to think on, plan, discuss, and move. Shooter, cause he got guns and the shit go bang. Yeah, the shooter brought guns and the shit go bang. Hands up, got guns in his bitch go bang. Motherfucker better run when the shit go. Hanging off the rooftop, King Kong. Bullets serenade the streets, theme song. Ain't taking no hits, clean bomb. Just needed him an outlet, three prong. Tired of putting in work, weekend. Now we getting it shine, sequin. Silence on the gun barrel cause he sneaking. Found a spot the pigs can't get to and vegan. Look at all the...
What's new this week? A rethink about labor from Freedom News UK. A syndicalist take on the meaning of Jeremy Corbyn's liberalism and what it means for how anarchists in Britain should start talking about the parties. Quote, "What do we say now that the easy, they're all the same line is not possible? It's quite tempting to either fall back on the usual refusal to engage with politicians, or be swept up in the momentum of a mild, fairly principled socialist leader suddenly being very popular, at least among certain parts of the country. Neither actually help. We need to revisit what is distinct about anarchism. We are opposed to capital and the state. We should be talking about our problems with power in all its forms. And it will be interesting if Corbyn ever succeeds in his aim of devolving some powers away from Westminster, likely to be anathema to the centralizing Labour Party." Unquote. This story is also notable for some extensive comments by a critic that are definitely worth reading.
Lecce, Italy, Tilt, a place for information and struggle against the TAP, Trans-Adriatic Pipelines, from Act for Freedom Now. An announcement of a location and a print project, quote, "Tilt is a new project to try to take up a train of thought that has never been abandoned, that of an opposition to the TAP, among other things, without mediations or compromise, a radical opposition whose point of strength and rupture is constant conflictuality, not only against the TAP and all its collaborators, but also against the world of politics that has approved it, the economy that supports it, and the managers of order who protect it. a place in which to discuss, meet, exchange information, self-organize, give and receive suggestions, a paper to start to criticize what surrounds us, express what we have at heart, unquote.
Ursula Le Guin and Utopia, from Anarchist Writer's Blog by Anarcho. This is mostly a long and partisan defense of Le Guin's The Dispossessed against those who would malign it, or Le Guin's anarchism, by an anarcho-communist fan. The typos occasionally make it confusing. It turns into a discussion of social controls through peer pressure versus through more formalized channels. Anarcho switches what he means by utopia from an ideal society to an unrealistic society, which is also mildly confusing.
Announcing Resistance is Fertile 2018 from Montreal Counterinfo by Anonymous. This is a mildly confusing announcement that seems to be announcing a slogan. You have to go to the Facebook page to realize that Resistance is Fertile is the name of a week of events and is making up words like densify. At any rate, some folks in Ottawa are excited about their new social space called the Garden Spot, G-Spot for short, and they list here some of the upcoming events in this space and links to the Facebook page. Quote, these potential mobilizations aside, it's just a good thing in general to densify the interconnectivity amongst those who want to fight for lives free from the state, capitalism, and oppression. So we encourage folks to travel to Ottawa to build bridges between our communities, unquote.
Greece, anarchist prisoner of war Konstantinos Yagtsoglou begins hunger strike, from Insurrection News. This is both a call for a general assembly in Greece and some background information on this prisoner, who was arrested in late 2017 while transferring guns and explosive materials. He is hunger striking to stay in Athens, where all his family and friends are, rather than getting moved to a city over 350 kilometers away.
What might an anarchist language look like? I created one, inspired by Ursula Le Guin, from theconversation.com, which has the tagline, Academic Rigor, Journalistic Flair, by Martin Edwards. This is a brief mainstream article on someone who developed a thumbnail of a language based on the one described in The Dispossessed. Quote, the final design incorporated almost everything Le Guin stipulated about Pravik in the book. The designed language makes it difficult to assert ownership. Possessive pronouns, my, your, their, etc., are out. But simple words like have and give must also be excised. Expression of self also has to be restricted. People would not do things. This creates ownership of the action. Things are done by people. Consequently, the whole language is expressed in the passive voice. Another device to reduce selfhood was taken from Malay. The pronouns I and you were replaced by noun phrases expressing roles, with default roles being a speaker and the listeners. Unquote. The author of the piece was chosen for this project because he teaches a class in which students create their own languages. Cool, no?
Reframing the question of gun control in the context of a school shooting, from The Anarchist Library by Francesca. This is a reasonable anarchist response to the circus that happens around mass shootings in the U.S. My personal preference would have been something a bit less reasonable, like maybe pondering whether mass shooters have an ecological role in an overcrowded world. But Francesca is not me, and that's okay. Quote, I believe that schools, as they are people factories that breed the next generation of school shooters, army generals, cops, wife beaters, etc. I think we can create something better than what we now know of as schools, something that eliminates the line that modern schools draw between learning and living, for instance. I believe that nuclear families, as they are, promote isolation and foster some early and basic us versus them thoughts that are dangerous. I think prisons should be abolished and people should no longer be policed, and that our education system and other clunky institutions shouldn't operate with the intent to separate people into criminals and homeowners. I see that positions are taken by people after school shootings that non-coincidentally mirror exactly the positions of major news anchors and non-coincidentally only pose questions that risk keeping things basically the same. And I understand that it's tempting to reject the idea of fundamental change in favor of making some more laws because that route doesn't require responsibility on our part over our own lives, and it really is just an easier path of lesser resistance, unquote.
Countering Black Metal Bullshit in Olympia, from Puget Sound Anarchists. This text starts out with a bang by quoting a Norse god. I guess that's safe these days. The PNW, led by Olympia, has been a hotbed of black metal music controversy for many years now, which makes some of us look at this latest offering with an eye that is even more than usually jaundiced. It could be totally valid. It could be hype the Antifa self-aggrandizement. We're reading it on the internet, so how can we know? Hint, slippery slope arguments are an indicator of something suspicious. Quote, there is a fascist creep in anarchist and anarchist adjacent milieus, but it's not just in obscure egoist circles. This creep exists in the hip DIY music scenes, especially in Ollie, and people's friendships make it hard for them to see what's really going on. People who say they are anti-fascist have friends who are in bands that play sketchy festivals and make friends with sketchy people. Unquote. Antifa is not enough. We must also be anti-sketch.
February's issue of Friendly Fire from the Friendly Fire Collective. So these are Christians who draw on anarchist thinking, as they put it, for their take on lefty activism type actions with spicy Jesus for flavor. Quote, fascism is a thing. Nazis are a thing. 2017 has taught us that all too well. Here at Friendly Fire, we believe if Jesus were alive as a flesh person on earth today, he'd be as Antifa as they come. Here are some opportunities to join Antifa Jesus in fighting fascism. Unquote. Zombie Jesus is the best Jesus. Everyone knows this.
Founding Conference of New Anarchist Organization, the Anarchist Communist Group, from LibCom. Announcement of the start of a new revolutionary anarchist group. Quote, this will mean the working class overthrowing capitalism, abolishing the state, getting rid of exploitation, hierarchies, and oppressions, and halting the destruction of the environment. To contribute to the building of a new revolutionary anarchist movement, we believe it is important to be organized. We are committed to building an effective national and international organization that has a collective identity and works toward the common goal of anarchist communism, whilst at the same time working together with other working class organizations and in grassroots campaigns. We do not see ourselves as the leaders of a revolutionary movement, but part of a wider movement for revolutionary change. In addition, we strive to base all our current actions on the principles that will be the basis of the future society: mutual aid, solidarity, collective responsibility, individual freedom and autonomy, free association, and federalism. Unquote. It wouldn't be British anarchism if it weren't all about class.
Anarchist Union reverses firings at Port of Barcelona through militant strike from It's Going Down by the IWW Solidarity Commission. Some workers got rehired. This is a victory. Quote, the CNT branch at the Port of Barcelona are a great case study of what the CNT is doing right by combining militant and resilient workplace organization with a commitment to broader working class struggles against capitalism and ultimately to libertarian communism. By doing this, they have been able to play an increasingly significant role in helping to unify and spread working class struggles in Spain. Victories at individual workplaces such as the Port of Barcelona can have a huge effect on the confidence of workers to engage in larger struggles, which can then give a sense of strength to the day-to-day organizing in workplaces and communities, unquote.
Review, The Anarchist Roots of Geography Towards Spatial Emancipation, from Freedom News by John Clark. This is the second piece on this book. The first was by Anarcho and mentioned last week. This is much shorter and less interesting. A book report, just going over what the book includes without greater context and hardly any analysis. Quote, Springer concludes with the hopeful thought that places wild and free still exist. In such places, new possibilities for realization of beauty, goodness, freedom, and creativity are always present, ready to emerge. We need a politics of possibility based on living an awakened, engaged life in such places so that we ourselves become the horizon, unquote.
Update on the Hamilton, Ontario Anarchist Book Fair, March 3rd and 4th, from Anonymous. Quote, we just published the final list of workshop descriptions and tablers and thought we'd take a minute to summarize a bit of what to expect at the book fair. We got a lot of workshop submissions, and our hope in choosing the ones we did was to highlight the various approaches to the struggles against systems of domination in the region in order to both emphasize what we have in common and to create productive spaces for engaging with differences, unquote. If that sounds like they're emphasizing the region of Ontario, the workshops on Chile and Syria would refute that, but I guess highlight is open to interpretation. Best wishes to them.
Fire and Fury in the Time of Trump, from Anarchismo by Wayne Price. There have been various attempts at speaking anarchy to normies, and one of the most viable seems to be putting out an anarchist perspective on popular culture. The Anvil Review was one such attempt. Agency was another, amusingly named. And of course, much of Crime Think in general has this goal. This review by Wayne Price would fit into this genre. Someone find a good name for it. At points, this review takes on the flavor of normal leftist analysis. But while I disagree with Wayne's anarchy flavor, I absolutely respect the fact that he authentically keeps trying to talk to the anarchists who disagree with him. Quote, "For years, the liberals have been opposing the greater political evil by supporting the lesser evil. Sometimes they won and sometimes they lost. But overall, the greater evil got more and more evil, and so did the lesser evil. That is, the Republican Party became completely committed to far-right ideology, while the Democratic Party moved to where the moderate Republicans used to be. For example, for a healthcare program, they did not advocate the liberal single-payer approach, but adopted the program developed by Mitt Romney when he was Massachusetts governor. In brief, the politics of lesser evilism has not worked," unquote.
Urgent call to continue the solidarity campaigning with the repressed Russian anarchists. Actions carried out on February 5th through 12th. From Contra Info. There were international solidarity actions, including film showings, graffiti, leafleting, banners, and pickets. 21 cities in Russia had actions, some in Ukraine, Budapest, the U.S., France, Poland, Czech Republic, etc. Quote, "The week of solidarity was held in solidarity with Russian anarchists subjected to repression by the FSB. In the fall of 2017, the FSB arrested 6 anarchists from Penza. The reason for the arrest was that all of the 6 played airsoft, which was regarded by the secret services as training for the overthrow of state power. Weapons were implanted on the detainees. The detainees were accused of organizing a terrorist community," unquote. Torture and arrests continue. Solidarity actions must continue also.
Mexico, idealized nature, on absolutism and misanthropy from its going down. I think this is making 2 main points. One, that people romanticize nature to the detriment of all concerned. And 2, that all of humanity is not ecologically destructive, or at least not equally so. It says some other things, like misanthropy, nihilism, and pessimism are bad, and so on. But mostly that just reinforces the impression that this is a response to communications from eco-extremists. I would argue that the first 2 points are sound, but that the second one emphasizes agency in a way that echoes Hollywood movies and so is suspect. I assume the eco-extremist response would be that whether one is a baker or a banker, all are participating in the system that is the problem. That to target those who do or seem to have more decision-making power overemphasizes the relevance of choice within a system that takes choice away from all of us. At any rate, I like the ending tag, "We are not defenders of nature, we are nature defending itself." But it avoids a lot of pertinent questions. And as Anonymous pointed out in the comments, it's exactly what some eco-extremists would say.
Banner in solidarity with anarchists persecuted by Operation Erebo in Brazil, from Act for Freedom Now. Quote, "The political economic context in Brazil and in Latin America is even more repressive against social movements. The political climate has a bitter taste for all those who oppose it and oppose in general devastating capitalism. A few days ago, 12 indigenous people from Brazil's southern territory were tortured, hit by rubber bullets and real bullets, for the simple fact of claiming their lands, which they were promised almost 30 years ago. It also has this flavor for the great so-called minorities of that sick society who are being targeted by an ever-increasing so-called social cleansing of large enterprises, fruits of progress and development. The government kills legally by sending armed forces to what they call clean, the favelas, and does it also by organizing agricultural fairs in which the money raised is invested in what they call the security of farmers, the killing of indigenous people and peasants who dare to take back with their own hands their invaded lands." Unquote.
Media, A Surrounding for Us to Live Within, Notes on Industrial Society and Its Ecology, audio zine, from Resonance Audio Distro, by a friend of Ludd, 25 minutes. Quote, "In the notes that follow, we will try to bring to light some relationships between the progressive loss of individual and social autonomy, environmental devastation, and the sharpening of repression. Not in order to update the endless catalog of horrors and complaints, but rather in order to reflect on some possibilities. Just this once, we will start from a for and not an against, unquote. The reader mostly sounds very calm.
Beer and Rage Episode 2, Civilization. Video, 22 minutes. The PBS-style intro is the funniest part of this vlog, especially considering it entirely consists of a lone person tasting beer, overemphasizing his ferret, and pontificating on anarchy. The idea of people just talking about their thoughts on anarchy in a semi-public, semi-organized way is kind of cool. But the execution of this particular project is going downhill from a not particularly awesome start. Dude's definition of civilization is so broad as to be meaningless, and he assumes that most anti-civ people are not anti-technology, without any clarity on what those things mean or how he comes to his conclusions, aside from calling aloud the name of Freddie Perlman. Mostly, I think that lone dudes talking to themselves is not the greatest presentation possible, and not even a ferret fixes that issue. Freddie Perlman is cool, though.
Podcasts, Anarchy Radio, February 20, 2018. An hour. Nothing unusual about this episode.
Black and Green Podcast, Episode 3, an hour and 6 minutes. Contents are announcement of and brief reading from Tucker's new book, Gathered Remains, an anti-missionary bash, Christianity as a Force for Bad, New Tribes' Missions and the Decimation of the Panare, The Myth of Human Uniqueness, insights from Carl Safina on what we're not seeing, Tools versus Technology, Rewilding, and Overcoming of Identification with the Machine.
Hotwire, February 21st, 2018, quote, "There is Antifa activity in Tennessee, and folks in the Northwest continue to hold it down against the fascist creep. Solidarity for Afrin spreads, and an inspiring model to fight ICE raids emerges out of Koreatown, Los Angeles. We offer some analysis about the school shooting in Parkland, Florida, and interview both an anarchist attending the student-led rallies there and an anarchist author who's written about gun control. There's a short update on the repression Florida prisoners are enduring due to Operation Push. Walter Bond is in need of support, and we have some good news about accused Confederate statue topplers in Durham, North Carolina," unquote.
Free Radical Radio Books Podcast, Episode 3, The Trial by Franz Kafka. An hour and 14 minutes. This is three people talking about their interpretation of the trial, not reading the trial aloud for us. It's like listening to a very small reading group. I guess it is listening to a very small reading group.
The Chaos Communication Congress, 2017, in Germany, an anarchist perspective, 21 minutes, from Anarchist Radio Berlin. Quote, "In the Bad News Show, number 8, January 2018, we released a short story about the last Chaos Communication Congress from December 2017 in Leipzig, Germany, that included pieces of interviews taken there. Now we are publishing the full interviews to give you some idea of what the Congress can be," unquote.
The topic of the week, legibility. One of the major problems that anarchists wrestle with is what James C. Scott calls legibility. That is, the state's attempt to arrange the population in ways that simplify the classic state functions of taxation, conscription, and prevention of rebellion. For Scott, this attempted simplification includes large-scale centrality, planned projects like relocating peasants and developing the streets of Paris to prevent rioting, as well as standardized measurements and the encouragement of crop systems that lend themselves more easily to being taxed. Through force, the state acts to shape society into something simpler and thus more easily cataloged and controlled. His argument follows that the opposite of legibility has acted in history as a barrier to state projects. Crops that can be concealed in the ground and harvested irregularly, streets that aren't easily mappable, and the lack of written records all impede state attempts at control. Anarchist attempts at illegibility have taken a variety of forms, practices which are usually called security culture, that counter the state's attempts at preventing rebellion. Disconnecting from platforms like Facebook and Google products that render us and our relationships more visible and mappable, resistance to identity politics that makes people more easily classifiable by the state and capital, temporary, off-the-books projects, and more. Yet it's also the case that most of us live in a context in which we have made far more legible than at any other point in history, mapped through social security numbers, social media posts, and consumption habits. Is legibility a concern to you? How do you see it being resisted, effectively and ineffectively? Is it even avoidable, and to what extent? And joining me in the conversation today is fellow Blackseed editor, Ramon. How are you doing, Ramon?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. Obviously, I've sprung this topic on you. What are your initial thoughts?
It's interesting. My first thought about it is that, as you and I have discussed many times, I don't really come from an anarchist milieu, and nor an activist one. And so when I first sort of started writing and interacting with, you and other folks around issues, I was kind of unprepared for the issue, because like security culture, for example, early on in my conversations with, you and some of our other colleagues, there were these moments where people are like talking about security culture to me. And I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. So I think it's interesting that, coming to this as a, not to say that I'm a non-anarchist, but that I'm not coming to it from the same cultural background.
Sure.
To a certain extent, it's kind of a new idea for me, and sort of one that, it's not that it's never occurred to me, but it's new in the way that you're describing it, for sure.
Coming out of this computer world, this conversation usually turns into a really logistical, practical conversation, which basically boils down to what's your threat target or what's your threat? This little bit that I read assumes that the threat that you're concerned about is the state. But it not only assumes that it's the state, it assumes that it's the state that has a pretty granular level of control over the individual residents in the state. And I'm not sure that the federal government of the United States has all that much of a granular control on 330 million people.
Yeah.
Or to put it a little differently, the level of control that they have is, like when anarchists talk about the police, we tend to talk about how police aren't in the justice business, they're in the revenge business. And what that means is that, the level of legible control that the state has over the population is much more about finding your address so that if they think that you've committed a crime, they can, round you up.
Right.
And so for me, this topic has all these big conceptual sort of assumptions that I'm not sure map that closely to reality. Like in the way that James C. Scott talks about it, he's talking about village life where everyone is sort of known by everyone else. And, grandmas are peeking out windows to see, whether or not you're growing more crops than you're paying taxes for. I think all the arguments made here sort of make sense in that sort of in that sort of context. But in a city where I'm pretty much strangers to my neighbors, even though they might know that I'm fishy, the kind of tight mapping that's assumed here doesn't seem that close. Yeah. But that's obviously only one kind of threat scenario, the threat of the state, the threat of state repression. Now, when we're talking about legibility in regards to corporations like Google and Facebook, obviously that's something else entirely.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you in the first case in regards to the state. Of course, I think it's probably relevant to point out that, our conversation as two basically white guys is going to be a lot different in other communities, even within this country, right? In terms of how the state presents itself as a repressive organism, but I think that I'm not familiar with James Scott, but just kind of looking at these ideas and kind of thinking about them a little bit, I have to think about Foucault, which is, of course, coming from a PhD background is a major touchstone for me. And it seems to me that that, you know, Foucault's analysis of power as being fundamentally diffuse is a much more productive one. And so, you know, you've got these kinds of repressive or disciplining or domesticating, to use the kind of green anarchist inflection. You know, we have these forces and these powers, but they're diffuse and they're not, you know, they're, to say that they're kind of regulated or acting in concert is not, you know, that's not how they're structured. They're structured in this loose way, which makes them more sophisticated, frankly, but also kind of resisting this more kind of monolithic sense that you started us off with. It makes me think of that, that little pamphlet that David Graeber wrote on Fragments of an Anarchist Anthropology. Mm-hmm. And one of my absolute favorite sections in that is, which I've actually, you know, I've written about in a number of places because I just love this story so much, that he's talking about some of the Malagasy tribes under French occupation on the island of Madagascar. And basically describes how a lot of these tribes, when the French came in, they just went deeper and deeper into the woods to just kind of get away from them. And so, you know, as the occupation went on, you know, the French forces kind of went deeper and deeper into the jungles. And eventually it reached this point where these tribes just literally got in their boats and kind of rowed out into the ocean and just kind of sat there to wait for the French to leave. and you know, I mean, like, I don't remember right now off the top of my head how long the occupation lasted, but, you know, sure enough, they left, you know, and I love that story so much, you know, because it's just like, let's, you know, to a certain extent, let's just pretend that the state doesn't exist and just ignore it, you know, which obviously not everybody can do. But that story has always really struck me.
Well, I think that I'd be curious, you know, obviously Foucault has been absolutely perverted by the academy and by those who love it. But I sort of in my heart believe that Foucault would be part of the conversations that we're having today rather than removing himself just to the academy. What do you think, where do you think he would fall on a topic like security culture, i.e., you know, because obviously security culture makes common sense. How do you do the things that you desire to do outside of the gaze of especially the police?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know. Some years ago, I think in the early aughts, somebody put together a really nice collection of Foucault's writings on some of his more like explicitly political topics. And my guess, I confess that I did not read those volumes, but I suspect that there is stuff in there on precisely this issue. And these were kind of, I think they were kind of collected writings from here and there that were edited nicely. But
my understanding was that he was pretty brazen about the kind of illegality that he was involved in, you know, which mostly involved like, gay saunas sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of people get mad at Foucault because it doesn't appear, his argument doesn't appear to be explicitly political in the sense that he's kind of diagnosing without really proposing. And I had a conversation to this effect a long time ago with a Marxist friend of mine, who said, you know, Foucault is useless because he's not, you know, he's kind of presenting this and saying, okay, power is diffuse, but then doesn't really tell us where to go from there. But I think for me, I guess I would point to Max Weber as kind of a version of what I might expect Foucault to say in terms of, you know, the golden cage and kind of, you know, late capitalism and industrialism. Kind of demarcating the space for us, and then it's about kind of how we negotiate within that space.
To speak to the part of Foucault that gets the biggest reaction out of me, he did a series of speeches that was something like "Society must be defended."
Yes.
And my understanding of society, of course, is an entirely negative one as a sort of antisocial anarchist, where I especially see a homogenous society or a homogenous world that, you know, could be considered a singular society to be something I'm absolutely opposed to.
Right.
But obviously how you understand society directly impacts how you would think about, quote unquote, security culture.
Right. Yeah, I think to a certain extent, I mean, I'm utterly hostile towards mass society, and I think to a certain extent I kind of don't believe in it. You know, I'm not sure that it exists, in other words. Mm-hmm.
If it does, it's definitely a violent infliction upon us.
Yeah, I mean it's so multi-layered. I mean, on one hand, you know, I think I'm tempted to think about society as kind of the enemy of the individual. And on the other hand, you know, of course, society is the embodiment of all of these logics of control and repression, you know, that we've been absorbing for the last 300 years or whatever. So on one hand, society to me is the kind of, you know, psychotic, bloodthirsty kind of, you know, demon. And on the other hand, it's this kind of banal, you know, bureaucratic, institutional entity, right?
Well, I guess my question to you, since we're talking about Foucault in this context, is how would you see society reconcile his definition Foucault reconciled his definition of society, especially mapped to a question like security culture. In other words, how does one resist society if one defines society a certain way?
Yeah, I think that the idea that society can be escaped in some way is, I think, is not one that Foucault accommodates very well. I think it's definitely a totalizing force for him. So I think the idea of, like, you know, not being a part of society is not on the table. So therefore, the question is, like, you know, these kinds of more covert, you know, and here I'm also thinking about, like, the situationists, you know, these kinds of covert ways that individuals within society can kind of blur themselves or blur their status vis-a-vis society as a whole. So we become these kinds of, you know, amorphous kind of liminal kind of figures, which make us harder to track and so forth, right?
So in the context of anarchist practice, especially insofar as we talk about anarchists writing or anarchists doing, you know, activist type work, legibility is actually a sort of deep concept. You know, there's a nice article that we published within the Anvil that's basically about how Anonymous is the most prolific of anarchist authors. And but obviously both of us have chosen to write under our name.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your logic for why you do that?
I don't know. I think, you know, I'd be lying, I guess, if vanity wasn't a part of it, you know. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not, I mean, I guess in the most banal sense, I'm not worried that my writing is particularly threatening to the state. So, and also, you know, even if it was, I'm not really sure that that's how security culture works. And maybe I'm wrong about that because, like I said, I don't really know shit about it. But I think, and again, this is probably coming from academia where nobody gives a fuck what you're doing because, you know, everybody knows that it's completely, you know, harmless and meaningless. But, yeah, I guess my first reaction to, like, when people started to ask me if I wanted to use a pseudonym was like, why would I need to use a pseudonym? You know, like, what am I doing that's going to get the feds to knock on my door? And of course the feds do end up knocking on some people's doors, right? So
yes,
it's
the threat is not, you know, nothing.
No, yeah, clearly not. So maybe then, you know, my decision to publish under my own name is just being naive, you know. Maybe I'm just being naive and vain.
Well, the other argument for how it is that you communicate your ideas is about the critique of celebrity. And in this way, legibility actually is a democratic concern rather than just a concern about being an enemy of the state. It's a concern about whether or not you see yourself as higher than those around you, right? In other words, yours is a mm-hmm. name that should ring out. I mean, this would really mm-hmm. be fundamentally what the crime think argument is, that they've always avoided, you know, using their own personal names because they basically are a highly democratic project that yeah. doesn't actually see the specific individuals who operate under the banner as wanting to sort of hold themselves up high.
Sure. Yeah, I definitely, I do not share that. I am utterly opposed to that. I really am. I don't care for it at all.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the only thing I would say, you know, as my sort of addendum to your statement, it would be that fundamentally I want to be in relationship with people who are engaging with ideas, and that relationship, you know, humans don't actually have relationships with abstractions, and
sure.
and they have relationships with individuals. And
right.
so to the extent to which I want to make sure that people can have a relationship with me if they choose to, that they can be in mm-hmm. dialogue with me about these ideas, I use my
mm-hmm.
name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And all kidding aside, that, you know, that's how I feel too. I do not want to be seen as representing anything. I don't represent shit. You know, I'm who I am, and I'm the guy that's, you know, standing on the soapbox in the town square screaming at you. But you know who I am, you know? And I'm a real person. I'm not some kind of shadowy kind of collection or, you know, whatever. I don't represent a perspective beyond my own individual perspective, and I do want people. I've had some really meaningful interactions with people connecting over my work, and you know, I would be sorry to not be able to do that because I was, you know, trying to trick people.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Leno Mabel, written by Jackie, produced and narrated by Chisel and a friend. The editorial was written by a friend of the collective. We thank Aragorn and Ramon for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are available at littleblackheart.com. And for news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, go to anarchistnews.org.